Welcome, Perron. Towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Well, welcome, everyone, and I'm really happy that you're here. And I'm really happy to be offering this class. I think the topic is so important. The subject is trust in God's hidden hand. And there's a quote by Murshid that inspired the teaching, which is drawn as usual from a number of sources. So at the bottom of the page that I'll post this document that I'm sharing from, you'll see all the resources that you can look up and read further. But this is a quote by Murshid on putting one's trust in God. Put your trust in God for support and see God's hidden hand working through all sources. And that's the whole subject right there. And yet this teaching is, for me, it's been very inspiring. And I've drawn a number of different sources from different traditions in, because it's almost like a universal worship in and of itself. So here we go. Murshid says this, Hazrat Anay Khan teaches us this. There's a well-known saying in Hindustani, if the attitude is solid, the path becomes easy. If the attitude is solid, the path becomes easy. This is the literal translation. And Murshid says, but there's a better one. And that is, the right attitude leads to success. The right attitude leads to success. So we can see that how our mind is coping with the situation can lead us to success. And Murshid goes on to say, and I have this in bold because I feel it's so important. And the more we think of this, the more we shall find that this saying, a precious treasure of wisdom, and the more we think of this, the more we shall find in this saying, a treasure of wisdom. So this idea of the right attitude leads to success. The right attitude leads to success. Murshid says, health, happiness, success, harmony, all these things in life, the attitude shows the way. It's our attitude that's guiding us. Also, if the wrong attitude turns virtues into sin, also, the right attitude can turn what is called sin by people into virtue. So again, it's our how we're approaching the subject, our attitude towards something. As I've always said, an icon says, virtue or sin are not actions. It is the attitude that is the condition of virtue or sin. So it's like, what's behind that action? What's behind that thought? What's our attitude towards something? It's good to check ourselves. And he goes on to say, therefore, have a right attitude. There is no greater virtue than that, to think aright, to speak aright, to act aright, and there is sure success. Now, this reminded me so much, and some of you have written to me or we've talked of interest in Buddhist teachings. And I know all of you have done some study of Buddhism or participated in retreats. And so I thought if you'd allow me, I just want to briefly talk about the Eightfold Path on Buddhism. And it's the path that leads to enlightenment. It's not step by step necessarily. It's a unitive experience. But when Murshid said to think aright, to speak aright, to act aright, this reminds me so much of some of those eightfold paths. So I'm just going to click away here for a moment, and I'm going to share this diagram, collapse this. And you can see that this is what's called the Dharma wheel here. So the eightfold path is right or wise or skillful. In this instance, it says right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right concentration, right mindfulness. But all of these actually lead to right concentration, which is so important. As we know, we benefit more when we concentrate on our practices. I remember a dear friend of mine, and some of you met him, Gendun Jodso. His brother was a monk in Tibet and did a very long retreat. And the whole time he was in the retreat, his mind was on something else. So when his brother came out of the retreat, he said, "I didn't really accomplish anything. I was concentrating on something other than my retreat practices." So he went back into retreat. And it's kind of like that. Sometimes we're doing our practices and we get to the end and it's like, how did I get here? My mind was somewhere else. So we kind of want to bring our mind to that place of right concentration. The Dharma wheel, which is this is referred to, is a sacred Buddhist symbol. And we see that a lot. You see that always on the top of temples. You often see it with two deers there, representing sort of hearing the Dharma. That's what they represent. And this again is the path to enlightenment, or we could call it Lam Rim, Lam Rim. So I want to talk just a bit about the parts of the wheel because I find it deepens my own understanding. So the hub of the Dharma wheel is known as the Dharma chakra. You know, when we talk about chakras, the center. So this is the Dharma, you know, the teachings, the center of it. And there are different meanings, and I'll talk about that. But first, I want to start from the outside because when we read these this Dharma wheel, but also mandalas, we always start from the outside. And you could almost think of this as this is the plan view, but like mandalas, when they're rotated like this, they're actually a dimensional view. So, in a way, this is also like that. It's good to try to see that in our minds when the I won't say more, it's a whole other teaching, but let's talk about the outer rim. And you can see that there's a darker rim. There's maybe even a lighter rim around that. They're trying to distinguish that between the outer rim and the inner rim. The outer rim symbolizes the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth, and the possibility of liberation from this cycle. And so, again, this path can lead to one's liberation. The inner rim, there's a very thin sort of gold rim that distinguishes that, and then inward represents meditative concentration and mindfulness. And that's where we're trying to get. We're trying to center our mind and keep it focused on the practice. The spokes of the Dharma wheel can represent different things. So, for example, they represent the old Eightfold Path, but they also represent the Four Noble Truths and the 12 links of dependent origination. And so we can also glean that from here. The swirls, which we see at the hub, they represent the three jewels, meaning the Buddha, the teacher, the Dharma, the teachings, and the Sangha, our spiritual community of which we are all a part. The round shape represents the perfection of Dharma, the perfection of Dharma. And the Dharma wheel is also used in other traditions. We see that the Jains use it as well as the Hindus. But I wanted to talk about that for a few minutes, and if you're interested, you can go and look a little more and do a little more research. The whole point is keeping the mind concentrated and checking one's motivation, one's actions, and one's thoughts behind you know, what's behind all that? What's our attitude? So give me a moment. I'm going to stop sharing and I'll go back to Murshid's words. So Murshid says, if you say, several times I thought that something was right and it turned out wrong in the end, I will say you were not sure. Perhaps your mind doubted it, if it was right or wrong, or perhaps you were dependent upon other people's advice. Perhaps misconceived impressions influenced your determination of right and wrong? You know, how clear were we about it? If it simply came from the bottom of your heart and you accepted it and went on with courage through life, then it would be successful. From the bottom of our hearts, from this depth. So I think it's also important to watch if we're, you know, Amina just told me she was working on this book of Nora Nisa's, some of Nora Nisa's writings, and she was translating it. It took her a year. That takes a great deal of concentration and a great deal of commitment. And of course, that's certainly right action bringing that forth. So I wanted to mention that because I feel that's significant. And she's done that. I think she's almost translated all of the Sufi message volumes, and what a beautiful thing that is, giving those accessibility in the Italian language. So thank you, Amina, for that so much. But this concentration and doing something from the bottom of one's heart. He says, and if it's met with failure, if we do something and it's met with failure, the failure would become a stepping stone to success. If we don't let those things destroy us, they can actually be great learning tools. I mean, I know that's very true in my own life. I have fallen so many times, but having the courage to stand up again and keep moving forward and keeping my faith, it tests one faith, tests one's faith. And it can make one turn away from one's faith, or it can make one deeper in one's faith. And I'll talk more about that. But I know that for myself, every time I've fallen or been knocked over, it's been good for me, and I've learned something from it. You must remember that God never misleads sincere followers. That God never misleads sincere followers. Those who follow the advice of God within are always protected by God. I think that's an interesting phrase, too, because how do we know that we're following the advice from God within? It's a good question. Is this from coming from the spirit of guidance or our own will? You know, how do we determine that? It's maybe something to look at for these next few months and ask oneself. So again, he says, those who follow the advice of God within are always protected by God. For their affairs, God is responsible. Only what is necessary is an open discrimination. For what you wish to do, you must ask yourself. So he's telling us, stop and ask ourselves these questions when we're about to undertake some task. Is the impulse coming from my real feelings? From my real feelings? Is the impulse telling me to do it? Is my sense of justice satisfied with this decision? Is my sense of justice satisfied with this decision? Is my reasoning in accordance with my actions? Is my reasoning in accordance with my actions? Is my deepest feeling in harmony with this direction? Is my deepest feeling in harmony with this direction? And again, we've talked about it. The breath is a good barometer, a good signal. Where's your breath when you're concentrating on something you're about to undertake? Is the breath balanced? Maybe then you stay still. If the breath is in the left side, it's really definitely kind of a weight. If it's chest and the right side. It's like go forward. So use your breath, become a master of the breath, do the breath practices as a sign, because that's the only way we're going to have that level of concentration and insight into what the breath is telling us. But it can be a great tool. And then the last question Mershon says to ask ourselves, is there any conflict within myself? Or is the way all smooth? So just stop. He's telling us to be thoughtful. You know, we hear these stories of Mershon and his movements that they were very, first of all, beautiful and lyrical, but he never rushed. You know, he took his time. Well, maybe in those moments he was sort of, you know, collecting himself in terms of what was his next action, what was his checking his impulses, checking his feelings, checking if this direction is harmonious. So if you all receive the bowl of sake from Wahidadin, read it today. It relates a lot to this teaching. I mean, he talks about being able to keep silent and how there's a power in being able to keep your ideas and your actions or your intended actions inward with the power of that. So I think that it's also related to this teaching, and you might find that that's also illuminating. And so the Murshid finally says, if all is smooth within, all is smooth without, and the way is open, it is clear. And then he goes on to say, Hazrat Anayat Khan, Pir Murshid, our teacher says, then we only must have faith, trust, and courage to go forward in the strength of the goodness of God. We must have faith, trust, and courage. Faith, trust, and courage to go forward in the strength and the goodness of God. And remember that it's not our strength or your experience or one's experience. I could say it's not one's strength, one's experience, one's knowledge that give us success. No, Murshid says, it's God. That is what is meant symbolically by the story of Arjuna and Krishna in the Mahabharata, the great Indian epic. Excuse me. So when Krishna consented to drive the chariot of Arjuna, Krishna being a representative, well, he was Arjuna's friend and he was his mentor, but Krishna also represents God. And so when Krishna consented to drive Arjuna's chariot into battle, which means Arjuna's heart and mind, Arjuna was free from worry and anxiety. What did he have to fear? God was with him. God was guiding. God was driving the chariot. Well, this is what Murshid's telling us. It's like, yeah. Are we willing to sometimes get out of that driver's seat and say, I hand it to you, God? More about that. The path was clear because God, again, manifest as Krishna, was with Arjuna. And nothing in the material world can assure success like this reliance on God. Those seeming things that, excuse me, those seeming things give a seeming success, but true success is God alone and all things are added. And of course, we know that from the Bible in Matthew, it says, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all things shall be added unto you. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. There's a prayer that I often say. I won't say it, I say it daily, but I try to say it daily. And it seems appropriate to share it here. And it goes like this, and it relates to this subject. May I seek God with a sincere heart, knowing that it will profit me nothing if I gain the whole world, yet lose my soul. So help me to see your, meaning God, your good and gracious purpose in all my trials. Help me to see your blessings in every day and help me to love you more. Thank you, God, for everything. Amen. So I'd like us to work with this practice. I'm not sure we've ever done this as a group, but it's a beautiful, beautiful practice. And I'll speak a little bit personally about it. But first, just to talk about the practice. The practice is Yawakil, Wakil, but the long E for IL, Wakil. However, in Farsi, or Urdu, which is what Murshid spoke, the V is commonly transliterated into a V. So therefore, it becomes Yawakil. And this is how I learned it from Pir Vilayat, of course, the son of Anayat Khan. So I'll say that practice that way. If you wish to say Yawakil, then of course that is a correct pronunciation as well. And what does this mean? It means that God is the divine trustee and our advocate in life. The divine trustee, the one that is the best friend in the whole wide world. I know I have some besties here online, but this is the very best friend God is. And Yawakil is the only one who's worthy of complete trust. So meaning God is the only one worthy of complete trust in every aspect of our life. Yawakil is reliable protection, steadfastness, and it gives resilience as we're moving through life. So protection, steadfastness, and resilience to help us go on. A Yawakil is a remedy for those that maybe have trouble trusting others. Sometimes the conditions of one life, especially in childhood, maybe makes us feel that we can't trust people, but again, reminding ourselves that God is the one to be trusted. And people, although they may fail us, they're doing the best they can. The same root, and you know this, that we've talked about this, that Arabic's a consonant-based language, and therefore, Wakil or Vakil would be W-K-L or V-K-L. The accent marks change the meaning of the word, but the WKL is also the root of a word, tawakul, and this indicates submission to God, relying on God, putting one's trust in God. And some people have heard me say, lean into God, lean into God, just lean into God. I mean, where else can we rest and lean if not into God? One's trust in God should not be allowed to breed laziness. This is important, and also above what we were talking about. We can't. Pir Vilayat was really adamant about this when he talked about Vakil. He also talked about this with the practice, Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim. He said, you cannot allow this idea of complete reliance on God or compassion to allow you to not take a stand, to allow you to not be strong, to allow you to not do your part. You have to do your part, but you have to listen to God, and then you take your action. So it's being emphasized here again, one's trust in God should not be allowed to breed laziness or lack of care. Like, oh, I'll put it all in God's hands and it'll work out. Well, we have to listen and we have to do our part as well. I mean, we are the creation of God, and we're meant to enact God's wishes here on earth. So, you know, we just can't let go of all of it. And he says, rather, one must do one's own personal best, do our personal best, and then leave the rest to God, as indicated by the prophet Muhammad, who said, tie your camel, then put your trust in God. So do them both, you know. Tether that camel. Don't just leave it loose and say, oh God, we'll take care of it and it'll be here when I get back. Maybe not. Maybe it'll wander off with somebody else or get better food over there. So take care. Worship goes on to, well, first of all, let's just go back here. This idea of this trust. Again, I will say it, Vakil. You may say it, Vakil. And let's just, let me think. I might want to go down a little bit. Ah, I do, because I think this, I kind of should have put this in a different place in my paper, and I will before I publish this. Because this reminded me, this kind of trust. I'm going to read a little bit more from Murshid's teachings, and then we'll go back to the Vakil. Murshid goes on to say, one person imagines God, another person realizes God, and there's a difference between these two people. The one who imagines God can hope, but he or she cannot be certain. The one who realizes God is face to face with God. And such a person who depends upon God with certainty. It is a matter of either struggling along on the surface of the water or courageously diving deep, touching the bottom of the sea. Now, we live here at the seashore, and so we do have friends that are divers. And oh boy, when they go down and they get to the bottom of the See, I mean, and they're varying levels, that are appropriate for them to be able to go down. I mean, there are amazing treasures there that are in the stillness of the sea. So Murshid's trying to teach us to go deep, but I also thought diving deep, touching the bottom of the sea, it reminded me of the Bible verse in Exodus when, and this, of course, is complete reliance on God. God commands Moses to stretch out his hands. And this is to stretch out his hands. And why was he doing that? It was for that parting of the Red Sea to get to the bottom of the sea. And this is God's invitation for us to come closer and receive God's mercy and understanding, this opening up and receive this support. And this symbolizes trust, faith, and hope. Trust, faith, and hope that Moses had in God, and that God's solution was bigger and is bigger than our thinking. I mean, my gosh, how many times, maybe in your own life, you've seen it? You've thought things should go one way or they went completely the other way, but worked out beautifully. And it wasn't necessarily our will, it was some divine intervention that helped that unfold. So let's go back and think of this trusting in God. God is our trustee, our friend, the one that we can lean into, the one that we can give the reins to in our confusion, the one that can still our heart and our mind so we can really listen and hear with the ears of the heart. So let's do this practice. And I think let's do it 101 times, okay? So 34 aloud with Yah Vakil. And then we'll just whisper Vakil. And then silently Vakil. Yah Vakil. Yah Vakil. Yah Vakil. Yah Vakil. Yah Vakil. Yah Vakil. Yava kill, 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 Yava kill. Yava kill. Now whisper. Silently. Just feel this leaning into God. Let Vakil be whispered into every fiber of your being, every cell singing Vakil. Yavakil. I remember the first time I went to India. I had a friend, some of you might know her. Her name was Arifa Miller. She and I worked together on those alchemical wisdom cards of Pir Vilayat. And we became very good friends in that collaboration. She was many years my senior, and she had been to India several times. And she suggested, she didn't require, but she suggested, and it was a good suggestion, that I do this practice while I was there, Yavakil. She said it will offer you great protection. If you feel confused, you'll feel strength and you'll feel your direction. India's harsh. Those of you that have been there know that. And but I felt completely at home. And I know it was because Vakil was, I was inspired and felt that I could lean into Vakil. It was a wonderful gift that she gave me and taught me about the meaning of Vakil through the practice. So use it. It's a great gift. Murshid also says, there's no greater trial for a person than dependence upon God. I mean, that reliance on God, God is, how do we experience God? We all do in our different ways. But when you feel that, I mean, we can't see God, we can't touch God, or can we? Is it manifest everywhere? Is God everywhere? We're told that the presence of God is in everything. But do we feel it? Do we know it? Do we experience it? When we feel alone, we must really, really do our very best to become still and count our blessings. And in that stillness, feel that presence, that loving presence surround us. So Murshid again says, there's no greater trial for a person than dependence upon God. What patience it needs, besides the amount of faith it requires, to be in the midst of the world of illusion. And yet to be conscious of the existence of God. It's a great gift, actually. The world of illusion, and yet to be conscious of the presence of God. Murshid says the best form to worship God is every form. So while this is a world of illusion, if we can study and practice the best form to worship God is every form. There's something to that. God manifests everywhere. And not just in the pretty things, God's in everything, the things that challenge us, the people that challenge us, the people that disappoint us, the people that hurt us. There's a great lesson in that. There's some dialogue going on around us. About some expenses that our building's going to encounter. There's some people that are so angry about it or questioning it. And of course, there's been a lot of news because in Florida, things right on the ocean disintegrate very quickly. You know that if you've ever lived near the sea, the salt water and things take their toll. So it's constant upkeep. And if neglected, it can bring great harm. There have been a few buildings that have collapsed here, not far from us. So our board is taking that very seriously. But there's some people that are writing on our Facebook these very angry things. And so I put something out there that I had learned from my dog walks and our neighbors. When I see they're under construction, I ask them, how much did this cost you per unit, per condo? And I hear it's very much in keeping with what they're telling us. And so I put it out there, and it just what I know. I didn't, I think it was very objective, and just wanted to put that out there for people, maybe to make them understand things a bit better. And people have given all kinds of comments, and I could take them in certain ways, but all I did was every time I just put a heart, 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 because, well, everyone's entitled. I don't have to react to that. God's in everything, and everyone has a piece of it. Sometimes it manifests as a wrathful deity or a confused child or whatever. So we just, the best form to worship God is every form. So again, there's no greater trial for a person than dependence upon God. What patience it needs, besides the amount of faith it requires to be in the midst of the world of illusion and yet be conscious of God. I feel that this is, I've been reading this book. I know Gemma reads this book. I know Gemma's mom reads this book. I know I've referred people to this book. It's called Jesus Calling. I don't know if you all know it. You can get it as an ebook, and it's by Sarah Young. And she had these inspired words flow through her, but she also adds scriptural readings from the Bible to it. And it's a daily meditation. So along with my bowl of sake and commentary and my study every day of Mershit's writings and preparing for these classes, I read this. In fact, in the morning, this is the first thing I read, and then bowl of sake is the second thing I read. And if you need to know what bowl of sake, what I'm talking about, write me and I'll send you a link so you can subscribe. So these are her words. This is her inspiration that flowed. And then there's a scriptural reading. And I feel like it's so significant. And it was on November 11th that I read this, but I bookmarked it. I think it's the only thing I've bookmarked in the book just to go back to when I need to. And it starts, capital letters, do not let. Do not let any set of circumstances intimidate you. The more challenge in your day, the more of my power I place at your disposal. Fuck you. The degree to which I strengthen you on any given day is based mainly on two variables: the difficulty of your circumstances and your willingness to depend on me for help. Try to view challenging days as opportunities to receive more of my power than usual. Look to me for all that you need and watch to see what I will do. As your day, so I shall be your strength. So God is always there and is empowering us according to the degree that we need to be empowered. But again, we have to concentrate, pay attention, listen, take a few minutes. Don't just run off acting. Be mindful. Sit back. Lean into God. And then she did quote this, and I thought it was relevant, so I will share this. It's a letter that Paul wrote to the Ephesians, and it says, it's so precious because Mershit says these words too. I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened. Merchant says that all the time. May you see with the eyes of your heart and hear with the ears of your heart. And here St. Paul says, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened. Enlightened. So that you will know the hope of God's calling. What are the riches of the glory of divine inheritance in the saints? And what is the surpassing greatness of God's power towards those who believe? These are the words in accordance with the working of the strength of God's might. And so I didn't highlight it up here, but Mercia does talk about strength, doesn't he, up here? I should have highlighted it. But he was talking about us having this strength and this courage and, oh, trust, faith, and hope. And here St. Paul is saying power, strength, and might. So listening to the with the ears of the heart, excuse me, no, I pray that the eyes of the heart may be enlightened. So that you will know, that you will see what is the hope of God's calling and the glory of God, and the power and the strength and the might. Again, leaning into God. So, again, contemplate those words and let them resound in oneself, power and the strength and the might. Again, today's teaching in the Bola Sakya and the verses that out of Merchant's teachings that Wahida Dean selected really illuminate this because it's talking about keeping the silence and the stillness. So again, that's bringing mindfulness and concentration before we act, before we speak, and right action, right view, right attitude, right speech, right livelihood, so on and so forth. Merchant goes on to say, excuse me, if you trust anyone, trust in God, Bakil. If you depend on anyone, depend on God. If you confide in anyone, confide in God. If you revere anyone, worship God. Death is not the end of life. Death is not the end of life. Death is the bridge that unites friend with friend. It's the bridge. We've talked about this before. Sons and daughters of God, the sons of God, S-U-N-S, you know that there's that ray that's coming from that divine source. And we ride in on that ray. And while on earth, we're functioning at this one end. But that's not to say that the connection isn't still there. And we will travel back on that ray to that divine source. So that's our bridge. And Vakil helps us bridge that, trusting in that connection. You know, the Sufis say, die before death. No, it's the meaning of the control of one's ego and the alignment of one's will with the divine will. And to illuminate this point, I wanted to turn to Mevlana Jalaluddin Rumi for advice. And of course, it's apropos because this is the time of year that Mevlana left his body and it's still celebrated, you know, more than 800 years later. And I will read this. When Rumi speaks about the annihilation of the false ego, that is the most uplifting philosophy that one could hear. He first says that your heart is like a mirror. What generally happens is that the mirror becomes dusty. So this may be our afflicted emotions, our confusion, our maybe even our lack of trust. But you know, it happens from time to time. I always say to people, when you're feeling that way, check yourself. Did you eat properly? Did you get enough rest? And did you exercise? Because sometimes our physicality can also set us off a little bit. And so we're out of kilter. But we turn to God and all the favors that God's put upon us. So again, Rumi says that our hearts are like a mirror. What generally happens is that the mirror becomes dusty. You have to wipe it and take the dust off of it. And of course, our breath practices do that. Our zikr does it. Allah, Allah. Our wazifa do it. Yavakiya. Just wiping and polishing the heart. In the esoteric or Sufi path, mystical path, the teacher shows their pupils the way of wiping the mirror so that the reflection may become more clear. So again, our practices do this. And we have such a rich legacy that's been given to us by Hazrat Inayat Khan, Nurnisa Inayat Khan, Pir Vilayat Inayat Khan, Hidayat Inayat Khan. They've all carried this lineage through their words. Rumi points out your first enemy is hiding within yourself. And that enemy is the nafs or the false ego, this false sense of who we are. And the ego isn't bad. The ego is actually a very helpful tool, but we have to make sure we tame it and train it. But it's very difficult to explain the meaning of the word false ego. The best I can do is say that every inclination that springs from disregard of love, harmony, and beauty, and which is concerned with oneself and unconcerned with others, is the false ego. So, well, that's a really good way to check if we have the right attitude, the right view that Murshid's talking about. Is it just concerning ourselves? Or are we concerned about others when we take up what we say, what we do, how we act? It's a good check. I have a little bit more. You can stick with me. When your object is, or so it seems, in the mist, so it's like foggy. Do not cover yourself with clouds because your object seems far off from you. If you do, everything will become dark before you. But if you keep your light clear, your light, then the rays shooting from your own soul, will in time clear the mist. It's like the sun does that. It breaks open the clouds and it can clear the mist. And sometimes you get a beautiful rainbow. But if you yourself are in confusion whether to have the object, have to have this object or that object or no object, he says, but if you yourself are in confusion whether to have this object or that object or no object, then there's no hope. There's just no hope for you. For you must ever bear in mind, listen, the light and life that goes out from you to the object is as important as the light which comes back to you from the object. I hope these words sound familiar, and I hope they're words that you do every day with your purification breaths. Therein lies the great mystery of the Trinity of all things. The knower, the thing to be known, and the power of light and knowledge that connects them. So there, Murshid is giving us another, a very big clue, that this practice that we do for purification. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Is this exchange that can help enlighten, illuminate, and clarify? I've made a link in this document that you can click to get the practice to remind yourself of it. But again, it's going through the cycles of 20 breaths, actually, where you're breathing in the nose, out the nose, in the nose, out the mouth, out in the mouth, out the nose, in the, we know that cycle. I don't need to go through it, although we can at another time, not enough time today. But the phrase is, I inhale divine light and life, and then breathing out, I radiate divine life and light. And that we are receiving that light of our object of attainment by inhaling divine light and life. And when we radiate it back again, we keep radiating that light from our soul and clearing the mist of our direction, our object, our undertaking, our wishes, our desires, our aims. And keeping the light radiating from your soul in the midst that maybe envelops the object, bringing the life and the light from the object back to yourself. So, anyone that knows that practice, Tonglen, it's got a kind of version of that exchange. But this is also this idea of the knower, the object to be known, and then the knowledge. This is the same thing. Ishq Alam Mabud Allah. That's also what it means. And so this practice of our purification breaths can help bring that into clearer perspective. Very important. I'm going slow because I feel this is such a rich and vast teaching. The knower, us, the thing to be known, God, and the knowledge that connects the two. Ishq Allah, Mabud Allah. And for the Sufis, that's love, not attachment. But a deep, deep love. Murshid says, if the way seems closed, it will be opened. If the means are lacking, they will be given. They will be attained. If the object is far off and beyond your reach, it will be drawn to you. But again, you have to do the effort of your practice. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. This is a beautiful exchange that you can do to help accomplish things and manifest in one's own life. If the means of la is lacking, they will be given. They will be attained. If the object is far off and beyond your reach, it will be drawn to you. If you only hold fast to the rein, that means meditative concentration. The rein is our mind, the restless mind. You have to hold it. And the rope of hope, the rope of hope. We have that rope from that divine ray coming to us and going back again. Well, that's the greatest object of attainment, being aware of that connection to the divine sun and our ray. If you only held fast to the rein, the rope of hope, with complete faith and trust in God, Vakil, the giver of all things, the possessor of all things. And I remember years ago when my Buddhist teacher, His Eminence Kamtul Rinpoche, was alive, and I was starting Jamsay Sokpa, and some of you know that, the nonprofit that helped Tibetan refugees. It's like, I have no idea how to do this or how it's going to happen. And then he shared with me, you can look it up online. There's a place that's a Tibetan cultural study and handicraft. And it's so beautiful. You feel like you've walked into a heavenly garden. It has exhibitions, but the gardens are beautiful with fountains and Buddha statues, and it's just magnificent. It's just heavenly is all I can say. But this was an idea of Comte Rinpoche. I mean, he had been the former minister of culture and religion in exile, and so he had this idea. But how was he going to manifest it? He was running a monastery. There was a just means enough to run the monastery. How's he going to get the money? And he told me this story because I said, how am I going to ever figure out this organization and get it going? I mean, I have a career. I'm, teaching college, and I'm busy doing all of that and my research and so forth. And he said, all you do, it's what Murshid is saying here. You put the seed in your heart, you see that object of attainment, you focus on it, you hold your mind, you hold the reins, you use the hope and the faith and the trust in God. And he said to me, you don't need to have the answers. The answers will come to you if you do that. And lo and behold, they did. And so many good things were done, and so many beautiful people came forward to want to help us and to help the Tibetan refugee cause. And we were able to do a lot of good with that. So we don't need to know the way. We don't need to figure it all out. What we do need to do is keep that hope, that faith, and that trust, and things start to open up and manifest. Give it a try. Start with something little. Sometimes when I want to test it, I just try something in myself, maybe a quality in myself that I don't like and I'm trying to uproot it. It's a bad habit or something, a pattern of behavior, or maybe it's something I want to bring closer to myself, So those things, you can use it both ways. It's great medicine to help refine one's personality and concentrate better and draw things that are wholesome and beneficial into one's life. Okay. And then, just like that. Of course, these little things came as this teaching was being prepared, but there was this beautiful quote that popped up. I subscribe to Saint Mother Teresa's Facebook, so sometimes her quotes just pop up for me in a day. And it said, Lord, I know that you even hear the secret prayers of my heart. I will trust in everything, Lord. Well, this is Vakil. And she said, you're on the right track, Nuria. Give him that teaching. Lord, I know that you even hear the secret prayers of my heart. I will trust in everything, Lord. That's our dear Mother Teresa. So I think we should close now. We're right at an hour, Yahoo, and we'll stay around for a little bit if you'd like to have some conversation. And I wish you all a wonderful holiday, however you're celebrating it. There's a convergence of many holy days from different traditions just now, special time. And may all the blessings of God rest upon you. May you feel joy and laughter and comfort in every possible way. And may your heart's desires be fulfilled and blessed. And I'm not giving another teaching before the end of the year, but I have been asked, Murshida Marion Baker and Hassan Ravenwolf, he helps facilitate the marathon zikr through the Rouhaniyat, and they've asked me to participate again. So, of course, it'll be on the 31st, and it'll probably be somewhere between 3 my time, which is Eastern time, and 6. So I don't have the exact schedule yet, but we've been talking this week. I'll post the time, but I'll also post that that's happening. Usually, everyone's just the people from around the world. If you tune in early, you're usually Pir Shabda Khan's giving something to kick it off, and I follow within the hour. So everyone's about 20 minutes to make some sort of offering. And I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to be doing, but I've kind of been inspired to do something around healing because certainly the world, our earth, ourselves, we can use healing. The Seika too. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from thee. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy love and forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all, thy perfect And we ask if anything of merit has happened in this time together, that it spread in ever-widening circles, touching all those that are in need of comfort, food, love, warmth, a place to rest their heads at night and feel some peace. And I want to thank all of you, because I think all of you are very generous in your support. I know several of you give a monthly contribution. And especially at this time of year, we've written you a couple times. Our expenses, unfortunately, have increased. I've been quite shocked by it. And when I've called, so the service provider, especially our web host, who, by the way, has been very generous, they say, we consider you a legacy client, and we are giving you nonprofit. And you can, and they've given us limitless space on the web. So that's really good, because many places, if we had signed up later with them, we were one of their first clients. We used Bluehost, but they had said, they just would charge for additional space. So we've done everything we can. We've talked to all the people that we can. We've gotten all the discounts we can, and yet things still go up because of the industries driving it. So if you find these teachings of benefit, and maybe think of another dollar or two a month would really help us. So anything, nothing's too small, really. And we're so deeply appreciative. And thank you, everyone, for your generosity. And I just love y'all.